Welcome to Symptomatic Redness, a podcast for those who are pathologically interested in history, critical theory, philosophy, aesthetics, or anything that may inform the modern world. With your hosts, C. Derek Barn and Amol Sahu. In this episode, we discuss Assad Haider's book, Mistaken Identity.
I said I would get back to this, and I'll get back to it again. One of the best analyses in the book is when Haider talks about the popularity of Afro-pessimism emerging recently, and how that trans-historicizes whiteness and blackness beyond any, like, even biological correlate. You know, slavery is always black.
Right.
And to destroy whiteness, we have to destroy the world. So you have this apocalypticism. But also, like, it rejects any solidarity between peoples, because when pushed, it turns back into biological blackness. Like, you know, there's no comparison between the black struggle and, say, Palestinian struggle versus Jewish struggle, et cetera and so forth. Well, he traces that, and his analysis of what it actually does, which it normally actually supports the status quo, is true. Right?
Yes.
I mean, it seems to me it's hard to argue against that unless you think the apocalyptic dream of Afro-pessimism is possible. I don't even know what that means, right? If apocalyptic, we want to destroy the world, but what are they positing, a completely black world? But what that misses, and the way he presents it, is the way that moves from black nationalism as part of an international structure, to black nationalism as a form of ethnic chauvinism, to black nationalism as kind of a status quo, to Afrocentrism when the status quo fails, because he doesn't talk about Afrocentrism, then to Afro-pessimism.
Yes.
There's huge parts of, I mean, because he skips around in time, right? Like,
yeah, he does.
He'll jump and find a case point, jump 20 years in the future, find another case point, jump back, you know. And that works well for writing editorials when you're trying to find what are essentially didactic examples, but it's a terrible way to analyze, you know, an entire ideological. And what I became frustrated with is I couldn't tell if Haider thought he was doing a kind of deep ideological analysis or thought he was writing a polemic. Like, that's not clear to me.
I mean, I think that he thinks he's writing something like a convincing polemic, or what, something like, hey, here's a polemic, but here's all this kind of background thing to buttress my points.
His background points, actually, if you go back and read up on them, undermine or at least significantly complicate his points.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, I'm thinking of, again, that chapter on Amiri Baraka was one of those. So, and Philip Roth. And I was like, he starts off very sympathetic to Roth, and he goes through Baraka's history, but he like omits stuff. Like, do you remember if he brought up Baraka accepting like anti-Semitic conspiracy theories about 9/11?
I don't remember that, but if he did, he didn't dwell on it. It doesn't seem central to the point he's making.
Right. Well, but doesn't that undercut the point he's making?
No. What I mean from his point of view.
Yeah,
no,
but I mean, like, if he's using Baraka's coming around to socialism in the 70s, and he's pointing out how Baraka helped get people like a lot of the first black mayors in the 60s and early 70s, like in Gary, Indiana, and in Newark, and Atlanta. And then Baraka himself feels betrayed by that, and then he becomes more socialist. But he skips Baraka going back to some of that nationalism, you know, Nation of Islam style nationalism, which, you know, is sort of a Haider's model for all that is wrong with that identitarianism, right? I mean, because it's an inverted chauvinism.
I mean, I think that the core issue that's coming up in a lot of these cases is that he thinks about identity-based movements in basically two ways. So there's identitarian universalism or universalistic movements which take identity as a starting point. And these are good.
Panthers.
And then there's the particularizing identity movements, which in some sense you reify identity, ignore identity's relationship to power, and these are bad.
Do you remember if he mentioned the new Black Panthers are like Cleaver's Black Liberation Army or any of that?
there's a discussion of the Black Power movement, but
yeah.
I thought it was like really, I was really, really sketchy.
Well, I mean, he mentions Newton and the Black Panthers, which he's mm-hmm. right, and most of the Black Panthers do end up taking a sort of like, we're black nationalist only in the sense that we think we should have self-determination within a larger internationalist context.
Yes.
And we're also fighting for poor white boys who, you know, have Confederate flags on their belt as long as they're not racist, right? And the Panthers, in the main, really did believe that. But there are debates within the Panthers themselves, between Newton and Cleaver, between Newton and Carmichael, about all this. I mean, like, those movements were never unified on what they thought nationalism was and what they thought international. Yeah, or universalism was. They never unified around it. I mean, and there's also a weird, and I've noticed this in a lot of Jacobin-inspired DSA polemics. There's a weird softness for the pop front period and for like Stalinist-friendly parties outside of Russia.
Yes.
I mean, because, you know, you have to ignore, like, by the 30s, Russia had Comintern policy. The Comintern doesn't exist, and Russification, you know, by the late 30s and 40s becomes standard policy to unify, you know, the Soviet bloc. And not off of initially chauvinist logic. It was like, well, we had it here first. Stalin always thought that the particularism of Lenin was unfair because there was no way to give every single group that could possibly have some autonomy, their own autonomous areas to rule. And so his answer to that was to respect Lenin's wishes on like national sorting, but then to adopt a Russification policy. And I actually think Stalin, I mean, people will misquote me on this, but I think Stalin was actually right about the first and completely wrong about the latter.
Right. I would suggest that I'm glad you brought that up, because this shows the one way in which the notion of universality is too empty to do the work that we wanted to do. So, for instance, a universalistic political movement, you know, if you call a political movement universalistic, it's not obvious what specific political configuration that entails, right? It's not obvious whether you're talking about, you know, a political movement which wants to establish a specific nation state which cooperates with other nation states, whether universalism means a number of different nation states which share, you know, which are federally structured. Does it involve a rejection of nation states as a whole? What specific moral or religious identity does it entail? I mean, all universalism really means by itself is that, you know, there's some sense that the idea of universal human fraternity or fraternity by virtue of being human, that's the goal.
But that also could undo class politics, which Hayter doesn't want to do.
Yes.
Like it is universalistic except for class.
I mean, my sense was that it was the way he was thinking about it was universality is supposedly the aim. That's what we want to get to. You start from identity, right? But I think the sort of pervasive assumption here is that like identity is a clear enough concept that it can't be ignored. So even the good cases that he discusses, all of them are still, you know, working from this basis of racial identity or class, or I mean, not the class as an identity, it's a material position, whatever, you know. But Hayter seems to think that identity is, we can have a clear enough understanding of identity that any kind of political movement, whether particular or universalistic, starts from there. You know, the only difference is, does it kind of get stuck and reify identity, or does it attempt to go beyond it?